Last time in our study of Sefer Shmuel, we're in the middle of Parak Chaf, chapter 20, and we're up to Pasuk Chaf Dalet, verse 24. We had pointed out that this is in the middle, or this is still towards the beginning, of the Haftorah that's read in Shul when the next day is Rosh Chodesh, and we pointed out because it opens with the phrase that tomorrow's are going to be Rosh Chodesh. So here we're picking up Pasuk Chaf Dalet after the plan that Yonatan and David had made. David had the idea for part of the plan, at least in terms of how Yonatan was going to see whether or not Shaul was truly angry with David. And again, we're definitely of the opinion, if you don't know the rest of the story, based on Shaul's behavior, we would guess that he's really upset at David so far. It's definitely pointing in that direction. But David wanted to know for sure, and he also wanted Yonatan to know for sure. That was part of the acceptance on David's part would be for Yonatan, his very close confidant, to also accept the fact that his father, Shaul, wants to kill David. And Yonatan came up with the plan of how the communication would be, that he wouldn't, David would be hiding near the palace. Yonatan would go out with an attendant, shoot some arrows, and depending on how he told the attendant, if he told the attendant, you know, the arrows were on the side, that would be fine. If he said the arrows went too far, that's code. You know, just like the arrows went far, you, David, have to go far. You're not welcome back in the palace. So Pasuk Chaf Dalet, we're picking up with the actuality of the plan coming to real life. Vayisaser David basadeh. So David hid himself in the field. Vayihi achodesh. And it was the month, meaning it was Rosh Chodesh. It became Rosh Chodesh. Vayeshev hamelech, the king sat, el halechem le'echol. The king sat to eat a meal. Lechem doesn't just mean bread, but it's symbolic of a meal. Now, that meal, we're going to see that there are at least 2 days in a row where they're having a meal. And it could very well be that the king had a royal meal every day. That is just like we have meals every day. The specific Rosh Chodesh meal seemed to be more special, and that it would begin, at least in the mind of Shaul, that if David is not there, it would begin to pique his curiosity why David is not present. Why there's a kriuksiv, why the pasuk is written one way, saying the word al with an ayin and spelled, but we read it as el. I don't know why. I didn't see anyone say anything on that kriuksiv. Pasuk Chaf Hei, Vayeshev Hamelech al Moshavo. The king was sitting on his seat, kipam bepam, like he normally, like each time, meaning like in his normal place. El Moshev Hakir, he sat next to a seat that was by the wall. Vayakom Yohonasan, and Yonatan got up. Vayeshev Avner Mitzad Shaul, and Avner sat down next on the side of Shaul. Vayipakid Makom David. And Vayipakid, a lot of times we use the word pakid to mean remember. Here it almost means to take notice of that which isn't there, which is related to the word remember. If you are mentally paying attention to something, that's how you remember something. And if you're taking note, the Mitzvah Sion says, here it's understood, me'inyan chesron, what's missing, right? So David's place was missing. So the Radak and others fill in some of the story in terms of why it says, vayakom Yonasan, that Yonasan got up. What, right? Because here we're hearing that Shaul sat down and Yonatan got up. Why is that so? So Rashi and others explain that in times of old, specifically in the times of Tanakh, but really even up until the times of the Tanaim, there was a certain way to eat while reclining. They would eat while reclining on some type of couch, seat, bed, that they would be eating while they're reclining. That's the way, right? That's what we try to do on Pesach night, to recall the way kings eat. Well, here we have a king, and this is how a king eats. But it's not considered to be respectful for the king to have his son sit right in front of him in that leaning posture. So therefore, what usually happened is that Shaul sat, David, who is not a son but a son-in-law, would sit would sit next to the king, and then Yonatan would sit in the third seat, so that he wasn't next to his father. So in this instance, Vayakom Yonatan Vayeshev Avner. Avner, who we know is the general, the Sar Hatzava, the general of Shaul. So he allowed Avner to take David's seat so that he could sit next to, so that he wouldn't be reclining next to his father.
You know why they can't sit next to each other or recline?
It's an aspect of respect.
Uh-huh. Eating is like...
Well, eating in this reclining manner for the son to recline in front of the father. Happens to be the Gemara talks about it in terms of Pesach. Can a son recline in front of a father? Can a student recline in front of a teacher? Mm. In the end, I think we go with a lenient approach that it's allowed, but at least it's a discussion.
So it's not the same source of father and son not being able to get aliyahs back to back.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I don't know. I don't remember the reason behind that. Mm-hmm. But maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems
now the Radak says something very fascinating. The Radak says that Yonatan did not want to sit next to his father because of how this plan was going to go, and because he knew there's a good chance that Dad is going to get angry. He didn't want to be within striking distance. He didn't want to bear the brunt of the anger by sitting right next to him. The Radak's words are Ki lo ratza liyos samach la'aviv. He didn't want to be close to his father. Shem yiktzof olav al dvar David. If you would get angry over this matter of David, lo yeh samach lo lakoso. You shouldn't be close so that he could hit him. So that, you know, it's already according to that approach, you'd be saying that Yonatan has the ideas in his mind of what his father is capable of. And he's being cautious, and happens to be, you know, a little. This shot is a little bit, I guess, foreshadowing what actually something similar we'll see happens.
But now that the seat is open, is that not disrespectful?
No. So still, this Avner sits there. Avner still
he's
comes
gonna get
and sits
hit,
there.
Clearly, he's in a bad
spot. Avner's gonna.
The seat is still vacant.
Right, but at that point, Avner's loyal. So, meaning if the king is going to have an outburst that's just random, so you're right, then the person's saying that. But if it's going to be directed, so Yonatan's thinking that he might be the one to provoke his father. Mm-hmm. So here there's the next pasuk Chavav starts with a letter Vav, and this instance the Vav is clearly what we call a Vav Hachibur, a Vav that attaches, because the psukim are very related. Meaning, we have Shaul sitting where he was sitting. Vayipakid mekom David. The place of David was empty. Pasachavav v'lo diber Shaul meuma bayomahu. Shaul said nothing on that day. Meaning, it's not that he had a silent meal. He said nothing about the fact that David was not present. He stayed silent on that. Why? Ki amar mikrehu. He said to himself, "Mikrehu." Mikre is something that just happens, something that happens out of nowhere. The English translates it here. The art school translates it as a coincidence, something that just happens. Bilti tahor hu, ki lo tahor. Bilti tahor hu. He's without purity. Ki lo tahor. He's not pure, which is obviously redundant. And the Gemara takes note. The Gemara takes note of the fact that it seems to be adding words there. What does it mean, kilo tahor? So there are a number of options. Option number one is that the meal that they were having on Rosh Chodesh, there are special karbanos that are brought on Rosh Chodesh. But the special karbanos that are brought on Rosh Chodesh is a karban musaf, and that musaf is not a personal karban, and it's not a sacrifice that gets eaten by regular people. It's a karban chatas. And when you have a karban chatas, there's a portion that can be eaten by kohanim, but it's not. There's not a portion that's eaten by people. Here we're talking about a king. The king could not have been eating the karban of Rosh Chodesh, but it could very well be, and Mepharshim talk about it, that perhaps in honor of Rosh Chodesh, they added a karban shlamim. Karban shlamim is a karban that anyone could bring. We'll talk about it a little bit in the context of next parak, because next parak we're going to talk about the Mishkan again. But right now, the Mishkan is not, it was considered to be not in its permanent status. It was in the city of Nov, which was a city of Kohanim. So the Karban Musaf has to be offered at the Mishkan. But anyone can build a Mizbeach wherever they are. So Shaul, in honor of Rosh Chodesh, might have been having a Karban. Now, if you're eating a Karban, even if it's not an official Karban that was brought by the Mishkan, there's still rules and regulations in terms of the Karban has sanctity. And if a person has any level of tuma, any level of spiritual impurity, they can't eat from the Karban. Just like if it was a Kohen can't eat from Truma. When he or she, if it's his wife or daughter, have any level of tumah. So David could have had what we consider to be a light level of tumah, which might be hinted to by the phrase mikre, that if a man has a seminal emission, so there's a light level of tumah which in order for it to be removed, he has to go to the mikveh and then have the sun set, what's called Harav Shemesh. So Shaul is saying to himself, either what we're eating at a Karban, and David knew we were eating Karban meat, and he's not Tahar.
He didn't come.
He didn't have a chance to purify himself, right? If they reach nightfall and he didn't go to the mikveh yet, he's going to have to wait till the next day.
So it's an excused absence.
Now, the other level of interpretation, which is why they came up with the plan that it needs to be a couple of days. Because David and Yonatan kind of saw that this might happen, that one day is not going to be enough to pique the interest of Shaul that he's absent, because one day, anyone could be absent one day. And here we have Shaul drawing this justification in his mind. The other idea might be that if you have a Kohen, so a Kohen, a lot of the food that the Kohen eats is sanctified food because they don't have their own crops, so they receive their truma from, you know, so truma is not so much, it's 2%, but if you're a popular Kohen and you start adding up, you get 2% from this one, 2% from that one, you know, you build up your flour. All of that flour is truma, so if you're tahar, you can touch it and you can eat it. If your wife is tahar, she can touch it, she can eat it. For example, a person's wife is a nida, if he's a Kohen, then she can't make the bread. She can't make that. She can't touch it, and she can't eat it until she's not. If he's tummy, for whatever reason, you know, and back in those times, the tumma and tahara is much more complex. If you came in contact with a dead rodent, that would give you a certain level of tumma. If you're a Kohen, you're not going to be able to eat your truma dinner until you go ahead and purify yourself. So those are all foods. Truma and Karban are all foods that have inherent sanctity. There were people who were extra scrupulous, extra careful, to even eat what we call chulin. There's a masechta called chulin. Chulin means, the shorish of the word is chol, mundane. Chulin is all food that is not, has no inherent sanctity. The laws of regular shchita is found in chulin, because I'm not a Kohen, I still want to eat a kosher meat, so I need to learn the laws that's found in chulin. So there were those who were scrupulous that would only, even their chulin meat, they would only eat if they were tahar. So that Shaul and his household might have been that way. And so when it says that, when he's saying David might not be tahar, it might mean that it's not a karban. But we always eat our meat with heightened levels of purity. David didn't have it, so he didn't show up. He didn't show up to dinner.
Was all food had those characteristics?
Definitely meat.
Uh-huh.
Definitely
and
meat.
And bread, you say, the wheat.
It could be, right. When someone says they only eat, it could be bread also. If they only eat, what they would do is, I would imagine these extra scrupulous people, if they would go to the mikvah, it sounds like maybe they would just fast, maybe they would fast the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And then once the sun sets, you have that status, the in-between status. There's a small masechta of Mishnah, it's called Tevul Yom. Tevul Yom talks about the person who went to the mikveh, and the only thing that they're really waiting for is for the sun, mm-hmm. is for the sun to set. So now with the fact that it had so many at the end of the pasuk, the end of Chavav, it says Bilti Tahorhu Ki Lo Tahor. He could have just said Ki Amar Mikrehu Ki Lo Tahor. It says he's without purity; he's not pure. So the Gemara in Pesachim picks up on that when someone is trying to talk about something that might be a little have negative connotations, it has to be carefully worded, in a sense, that you don't want to be so explicit, and somehow adding words makes it a little more less explicit. Mm-hmm. Again, the question might be better. Clearly are there extra words here. But again, these are not words that are spoken. These are all going on in the mind of Shaul. This is the excuse that he has come up with in his own mind as to why he's not even going to mention to anyone sitting there, oh, by the way, where's my son-in-law? Where's David? Now, what I didn't see anyone discuss is Shaul is expecting David to be back in the palace. You have to remember, right, on paper, meaning the Navi that we have, when's the last time that Shaul was with David? Back in Naios, mm-hmm. back near Ramah, where he was with Shmuel, where Shaul's coming, guns blazing, and all of a sudden he starts prophesizing and goes through that whole... And it could very well be he never came in contact with David. Now, we know he had very good intel, and so maybe he finds out that David made his way back towards the palace. But he's expecting David to be on the premises. He's just saying, oh, he didn't show up to dinner because he's not Tahar. But he's expecting David to be there, which is rather odd because all likelihood, we would say David is not going to be there. David was already on the run. Right. The fact that he came back, we're thinking what's wrong with David? Why would he test fate? Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we have to explain that he needed to be sure. He needed Yonatan to be sure. Again, because the alternative, he has nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So while we're thinking myself that he's nuts for coming back to the palace, what really is the alternative? To go on the run for the rest of his life? To go on the run for an undetermined amount of time without anywhere to turn? With a king who's his father-in-law, who clearly was able to find him at the first place he ran away to. So what's going to stop him from finding him in the second place that he runs away to? So it's just interesting that in Shaul's mind, David is expected to be somewhere present. He's not at the dinner because he's not Tohar. Pasuk Chav Zayin. Vayimi Machras HaChodesh HaSheni. It was on the next day, the second of the month. No real understanding. This is not a reference to the second day of Rosh Chodesh. This is a reference to this just the second day of the month. And there's going to be another meal. Vayipakeid Mekom David. And the place of David was empty yet again. Vayomer Shaul El Yonatan Beno, Yohanan Beno. Shaul says to Yonatan, his son, Madua Lova Venishai. Gam Timol, Gam Hayom El Allah. Why is it that the son of Yishai, meaning David, has not come yesterday or today to the meal, to the lechem, to the bread, to the meal? So, but 2 days in a row? That's a sign. Yesterday's absence was not excused, apparently, because all of the reasons, the natural tumah that Shaul would have assumed. So, if for whatever reason on that first day David couldn't get to the mikvah before the sun set, well, the next day he had the entire daytime to get ready. The sun would have set, and he would come to the lechem, he would come to the meal, and he'd be able to be there. Now that he's not here, not only does it pique Shaul's interest that he's not here now, what was going on yesterday also? He's suspicious about both days. He refers to him as Ben Yishai,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not by name, which could be, it's derogatory. The question is to whom it's derogatory. So some of Farshim explain it's derogatory towards David. That's simple. Right? He's not even referring to him by his name. He's referring to him as just Ben Yishai. He's a nothing. He's a threat to me. He's a nothing. I don't even want to call him by his name. He's just Ben Yishai. The other way to understand it, it might be derogatory towards Yonatan, because he's referring to David as the son of Yishai. When are you referred to as the son of your father? When you have allegiance to your father. When you agree with your father, when you side with your father. And Shaul is quite suspicious of Yonatan that given the choice, Yonatan would side with David over himself, over them. So he's saying, where's that Ben Yishai? You're hardly a Ben Shaul. So where was he yesterday and today? Vayan Yehonasan es Shaul. So Yonatan answers back to Shaul. Nishol nishal David me'imadi ad beis lachem. David surely asked me about ad me'imadi from with me ad beis lachem until beis lachem, which is saying, could he go back to beis lachem? Beis lachem is where David comes from, and Yonatan is answering that he asked me permission to leave. Though this is part of the plan, that in and of itself is a little bit disrespectful to the king, meaning David is not the servant of Yonatan. David is the son-in-law of the king, but he's also the attendant. He was also one of his servants, in a sense. He was one who always played for him when he had that ruach ra. So who is David to ask Yonatan, quote unquote, permission to leave? Some of us might think it's crazy that he has to ask any permission to leave. He's the son-in-law of the king. Usually the son-in-law of the most powerful man in the world does what they want, right? That's what we hear. So son-in-laws, so he shouldn't have to ask any permission.
Do you go to the king for everything? Like generally, you don't ask like the president. You go to the staff, you know, to ask permission.
Okay, so it could be. Maybe I'm reading into it. Just my thinking. And maybe so. Maybe it is natural. So maybe Shaul's won't be upset about that. Definitely could be. We definitely don't hear. He doesn't say, "How dare he ask you and not me?" So basically, saying right, he asked me to go to Beis Lachem. Pasuk Chavtes, Vayomer, and he said, meaning David said to Yonatan, is quote unquote recounting the story, a story that we know never happened. Vayomer, he said, Shalcheni na, please send me. Kizevach mishpacha lanu ba'ir. There is a family feast, a family offering of a korban, taking place for us, meaning my family, ba'ir, in the city. V'hu tziva li achi. It's something that my brother commanded me about, or, you know, in this, in our language, we would say, invited me to come. V'ata, and now, imatzasi chen be'enecha, if I will find favor in your eyes, imaltana, please allow me to leave. V'ere esachi, and I will see my brothers, esachai, alkein lo yavo el shulchan amelech. Therefore, he didn't come to the table of the king. Now, why it is that within the quote-unquote story, why is it that David is saying that his brother asked him to come, and not his father. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure why it says brother as opposed to just saying like his father called him back. So Yonatan finishes saying the story of what happened, and he says that's why he's not at the Shulchan HaMelech. That's why he's not at the table of the king. One cute note. It says when the Art Scroll quotes a Hasidic Rebbe, Rav Mendel of Kosov, that when Shaul said the phrase Madua Lova Ven Yishai, so homiletically, he read it instead of saying why hasn't the son of Yishai, why hasn't David come, El Halechem, to the bread. So he read it as Madua Lova. This is not the pshat. This is an additional homiletical approach. Madua Lova Ben Yishai. Why has the Ben Yishai, the ultimate Ben Yishai, why has Mashiach, mm-hmm. who comes from David, who comes from Yishai, not come? So it's about the lechem. The lechem. The reason. The excuse is the lechem. The lechem. The lechem represents a focus on material needs. Mm-hmm. that when the Jewish people are focused on material needs, the Mashiach doesn't come. Again, that's not our pshat, but it's cute. So Yonatan finished, and here's the moment of truth, because he dropped the bomb. David's not here. Now, if you're peaceful towards David, you'd say, oh, he asked for a leave of absence to go home for a good excuse. He'll be back in a couple of days. No problem. Pasuk Lamed, Vayichar af Shaul b'Yonasan. Shaul became extremely angry at Yonasan, right? Because Yonatan is the one who gave the permission for him to go. Yonatan allowed the enemy of the king to leave the palace grounds. Vayomer lo, and Shaul says to him, Ben Navas Hamardus, you are the son of a perverted, rebellious woman. Which is very severe. Mm-hmm. What does Yonatan's mother have to do with any of this?
And it's also Shaul's wife.
It's also one of Shaul's wives. Halo yadati, do I not know? Ki vocher atal ben Yishai, that you choose Ben Yishai. You choose Ben Yishai, in a sense, saying over me. But also, he's trying to give a message that you choose Ben Yishai over yourself. Levashtecha, and by choosing Ben Yishai, by choosing David, it's to your shame. Ulevoshes ervas imecha, and it's to the shame of the nakedness of your mother. It sounds like he's insulting his wife and the mother of Yonatan. So the clearly he's angry. But he's saying a hint that the Rishonim pick up on. Why would Yonatan side with someone not his father? Unless, what are people going to start thinking? That Shaul is not his father. Because every natural biological son, the natural thing is to side with dad over a random other person. Not random, but over another person. The fact that you are siding with David, what are people going to say? People are going to say, I'm not your father. And if I'm not your father, your mother wasn't faithful. And he doesn't necessarily intend to demean his wife, but it's directed at Yonatan and Yonatan's decision. Levashtecha, as the pasuk says, to your shame. Rashi mentions an approach from the Medrash that goes back to the story of Pilegish Begiva, that in the aftermath of the civil war against the tribe of Binyamin, there were only 600 men from Binyamin left. And they needed to pair them up with the women from Yavesh Gilad in order to make sure the tribe of Binyamin would stay alive. And it says that Shaul was hesitant. He was a little bit ashamed or full of baishan. He was a little embarrassed, and he didn't want to go ahead and search for a mate. And the woman that he married, she kind of pushed forward. She kind of was more active in pursuing him. V'radfa acharav, she chased after him. And so there was something in Shaul's mind about this, about his wife, who ends up being the mother of Yonatan. And again, not that this story is saying that she did something wrong, but now he's thinking about perhaps she had certain personality traits that weren't so proper, and now he sees that that's being transferred to Yonatan, and the way Yonatan is acting. And again, this is coming from his perspective.
How many wives did Shaul have? Do we know?
I don't know.
And she's not in the picture anymore. I mean, we wouldn't know, but this woman who is Yonatan's mother would probably was.
Right. We're told. We're told that v'shem esha Shaul. We're told at the end of right at the tail end of Perek Yadalad. We're told v'shem esha Shaul Achinoam ben Achimatz. Her name was Achinoam, and we're not told about any other wives. We're told about all the children. We're told about his sons. Actually, it skips one son, but that we'll talk about in really. We end up talking about it in the beginning of Shmuel Beis. We hear about his two daughters, Merav and Michal, and we hear about the name of his one wife. So presumably it's her. And he's continuing to berate Yonatan. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Ki chol hayamim asher ben Yishai chai al ha'adama, all of the days that this son of Yishai lives on earth, lo sikon ata, you will not, you and your kingdom will not be established. I mean, you'll never be able to take over for me if David is alive. David is the one who is aiming for the throne, and if he's alive, you'll never sit on the throne.
Is this the first time we see him say that?
It could very well be it's the first time that he verbalizes that David. Now, he doesn't say explicitly David wants the throne. He's just saying, as long as David's alive, you won't get the throne.
Right. I mean,
which is clearly hinting.
Right. Because he never mentioned that before.
Right.
Even when he was going to kill him and everything.
He might not know for sure, but the human mind has the power to, you can convince yourself. Shaul has now convinced himself that David is his enemy. When we know now, and we'll see constantly proven throughout the remaining Prakim and Shmuel Aleph, David never wants to harm Shaul. He never ever has any intention to ever harm Shaul, even in the situations where he would maybe be justified out of self-defense to harm Shaul. He won't. So all of the days that this Ben Yishai, again, the derogatory term for David, is on this earth, lo sikon atal malchazecha, you and your kingdom will not be established. Ata, and now, shlach, send for him, v'kach oso, and take him, Eli, to me, ki ben mavesu. Oh. He is deserving of death. David is deserving of death.
And this he's saying out loud.
This he's saying out loud.
Just because he didn't come to the meals?
No. He's deserving of death because he thinks he wants to. He thinks he is rebelling against him, and he wants the throne. The meals are that's just the background noise at this point. Ki ben mavesu, who he's deserving of death. So Yonatan immediately responds to that. Pasuk Lamed Beis. Vayan Yonatan Ashal Aviv. Yonatan answered back to Shaul his father. Vayomer, and he said, Vayomer Elav, he said to him, Lama Yumas. Why? Why should he die? Ne'asa. What did he do? What's his crime? Right? The same, almost the same way that a parak ago, or two parakim ago, I forget exactly, when Yonatan was able to calm down Shaul and get him to take an oath that he wouldn't kill David, he said a line of reasoning saying, why would you want to spill innocent blood? Why would you want to kill a man who hasn't done anything? Which David had not. There is no crime. So some of the Farshim are bothered by how could Shaul say Ben Mavesu, that he's deserving of death, and then basically command capture him and then we'll kill him if he took that oath that he wouldn't kill him. Mm-hmm. So on a halachic level, there are situations where you can remove an oath. The same way you could remove a vow, you can remove an oath. There are ways to annul a vow, a promise, and there are ways to annul an oath. You can annul a shvua. And so if Shaul thought it was justified to kill David based on the fact that he's rebelling against the king, that theoretically would be grounds to remove an oath. Meaning if it was true, then it would be grounds to remove an oath.
So one question, is Yonatan not next in line like it is in our kings today where the son would take over?
Presumably Yonatan is next in line. Presumably, and that's the way he talks to him. He's mentioned when we that pasuk that I just mentioned to you at the end of Perek Yedalad, which talks about the lineage. So it mentions Yonatan first. when it says Vayu b'nei Shaul, these are the sons of Shaul, Yonatan, Yishvi, and Malkishua. So it sounds like he's the oldest. He's clearly the one involved, right, on a military level. We've only seen, right? We saw that when Perek Yodalad and the whole, the one of the last battles with the Plishtim that didn't look going well, so it said that 2,000 men were with Shaul and 1,000 men were with Yonatan. And we were introduced to Yonatan before we even knew he was a king, a son, the son of the king. He seems to be of military importance.
David is the one who's pushing for the top.
David is not.
Shmuel came to him.
Shmuel anointed him in Parak Tazayin, and yet nothing else has happened.
David, Yonatan is aware of this, though, so he's supporting him.
Yonatan is clearly supporting. What he's aware of, we don't know for certain, but he's clearly supporting David. So you would expect it. Last time, when Yonatan said, "Why should we kill him? What did he do wrong?" kind of logic, Shaul said, "Fine," and Shaul took an oath. Here, if you were, you would expect an answer. Instead, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vayotel Shaul Esachanis Alav Lakoso. Shaul threw his spear at Yonatan to strike him. Now, the Mefarshim debate whether he wanted to kill him or just injure him. It seems that he wasn't successful because we don't hear about Yonatan getting hurt, and we hear about Yonatan going on to tell David and things of that nature, but Shaul is willing to strike against his own son. So if he had the intention just to injure him, then it's just kind of a little bit of a punishment or a warning about siding with David. If he wanted to kill him, in Shaul's mind, it just may be that if the revolt is going against me, and if there's a rebellion against me, then I have to cut off even my own son if he's on the side of the one who's revolting against me.
Did the next king only come into being when the present king died, or could they hand over?
Well, the truth is, it's never happened before. Shaul is the first king. Okay. So there's never been the peaceful transition of power.
Okay.
There's never been any transition of power. What we are going to see together in Bezus Hashem and Shmuel Beis is that there's a 7.5-year period where it's not clear who is the king, where it's not a secret, everyone knows David's going to become king, right? Not ruining anything for anybody. David becomes king. But for the first 7.5 years, he's only king of the tribe of Yehuda, and his capital city is Hebron. It took a while, we'll see how it unfolds, for him to become the unanimous or united king over all 12 tribes.
But Shaul still lives through that. Yes, he does.
We'll get there.
Not going to give it away.
We'll get there. So his own father. Now, if Yonatan wasn't sure about whether Shaul was serious about killing David, being threatened himself, so the pasuk, it's the same pasuk, right? Vayatel Shaul asachanis asher olav lakoso. Pause. Vayede Yonatan. Now Yonatan knows. It was finished. This is a finished matter. The word chala is finished, complete. This is complete from his father. Lahama says David that his father wants to kill David. Some explain Vayeda Yonatan, because till now Yonatan was putting all those moments where Shaul may have done something improper towards David. Yonatan was chalking that up to moments where he wasn't mentally clear, moments where he had that ruach ra, that evil spirit of Hashem, however you want to kind of classify it in our, you know, depressive type of moods. Vayeda Yonatan, he knew because he was there. He was staring face to face with his father. He knew this was a moment of clarity. And even in a moment of clarity, his father is focused on the fact that he wants David to be killed. And that this is it. He knows. Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Vayakam Yonatan Meyem Hashulchan Bechari Af. Yonatan gets up from the table angry. Velo achal biyom hachodesh hasheni lechem. And he didn't want to eat any more of the meal on that day, that second day of the month. Ki ne'etzav el David. He was sad about David. Ki hichlimo aviv. The word ki literally means because hichlimo aviv, because his father humiliated him. If it was still talking about David, it wouldn't use it. It doesn't seem to fit that we're talking about David. It seems that there are two separate phrases. There's Natsav el David, that he's sad about David, but there's also an aspect that his father humiliated him, meaning his father humiliated Yonatan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might have expected the grammar to be slightly different, but that he had two emotions going on at the same time. That on the one hand, he has the emotion of the fact that now his best friend, his father wants to kill his best friend and his brother-in-law. So he's sad for David, and where David goes from here and what David's future is going to look like is now totally unknown. And there's also the aspect that his father humiliated him. It's like the king just threw a spear at the crown prince in the middle of the royal dinner. Now, what seems to be clear is that it was a single outburst against Yonatan. It's not that Shaul called for the guards to grab Yonatan and throw him in prison. There was like this, maybe you would say it was just like the initial reaction was to strike against Yonatan, and now Shaul is calming down or thinking other ways to actually find David and get David. But Yonatan is allowed to leave by his free will. Right? It says, Vayakum Yonatan, he gets up. Bachariyev, he gets up, he's angry. So he's angry, and then he's sad, and he's ashamed. It's like a whole mixture of human emotions. And I guess I never thought about it this way, but it's fascinating that the Tanakh chose to describe his emotions with so many different words. This is a moment, meaning if you were an actor and you were told that this is the scene you had to act out, I'm not an actor. I would imagine putting yourself into this role is extremely hard to do. Yonatan was just threatened. Maybe his life was even threatened by his own father as he's defending his best friend, who he now finds out his father wants to kill. And what does that mean? It means he's going to, as we'll see, is he going to part from his friend and never see his friend again? But still, now he has to live with his father, and his father knows that he sold out his own father to side with his friend. Because according to the story, he gave David permission to go back to his family, so he... Right, so the pasuk by talking about anger and talking about sadness and talking about being humiliated, it's clearly using the words to try to clue us in as to this horrific moment in the life of Yonatan.
Does he fear for his life at all, or does he think it was just a one time deal, like an outburst, and his father wouldn't try that again? Or
I don't know for sure. He's still initially going to go through with the part of the plan about shooting the arrows. So it could be that aspect of the plan of shooting the arrows, it's really could be two levels. It could be one level is clearly it's the best thing to do for David and David's safety. But maybe there's an element of it's the best thing to do for Yonatan and Yonatan's safety. It's one thing to give permission to David to go to a family party. And that's the newspaper headline in the palace the next morning would be Yonatan gives permission to David to leave, as opposed to Yonatan is meeting David secretly on palace, on palace grounds. If people were aware of that, that might implicate Yonatan in more of a way. Here it just sounds like, to some degree, it sounds like you are a little too nice to our enemy, and I'm holding you accountable for that. Why are you being so nice to our enemy, kind of thing, as opposed to aiding and abetting the enemy. This right now it's like simple, and if he would be caught, it could be more severe. Pasuk Lamed Hey, Vayhi Baboker. It was the next morning. Vayetze Yonatan Hasadeh Lemoed David. So Yonatan went out to the field, to the meeting place of David, not to actually meet him, but to where David is located. Vinar Katon Imo. And a small lad is with him. Because he's going to do the arrow sign, he needs an attendant. That's the small lad. Pasuk Lamed Vav. Vayomer l'na'aro, he said to his attendant, Rutz, run. Mitzanas achitzim, you're going to find for me, please, the arrows, asher anochi moreh, that I will shoot. Hanar rats, so the lad ran ahead. Vehu yara hachitzi lahaviro. And he, meaning Yonatan, shot the arrow, making sure that the arrow would go way beyond where he was. Now, I don't know anything about ancient royal bow and arrow shooting, but it sounds like this is the normal procedure, that you obviously don't want to hit your nar when he's out there trying to get your arrows. But you would expect that you first shoot the arrow and then send him. So it could be you, like, I don't know, maybe, I'm just thinking, maybe you sent him like midway. There's no, and you have him stand on the side. And there's no way that he's going to get hit. But he's just closer to the...
But it's unpredictable. I mean, you don't know what can happen when you release it, right? I mean, I don't know enough about bows and arrows, but...
But you don't know what's... Well, maybe it's an idea that, you know, if you're really good at shooting an arrow, so maybe standing next to the bow, you're not going to be able to see where it lands, kind of thing. So you need to...
Yeah, so he ran halfway down. Like, what's the problem?
Right, this is like the normal...
Half the way.
It's right.
Like, and then he shot the arrow. Going afterward. Like, I don't...
Because he has a far way to go. He's not like a dog that could run
right.
again.
Right, he has to get it so immediately. He doesn't he have many
it,
arrows?
Right, I don't know. I don't know.
That's the way they did it.
Yeah, that's what... I'm guessing from the presentation that's the way that they did it. And I wouldn't know otherwise, so that's where we're... Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Vayavo hanar ad makom achetzi, and the nar came to the place where the arrows were, asher yara Yonatan that Yonatan shot. Vayikri Yonatan acharei hanar levayomer, and Yonatan called out to the attendant, to the nar, and he said, halo hachetzi mimcha v'hala. The arrows, aren't the arrows still beyond you? You're not there. The arrows are beyond you, which we know already that's the code word for David. That David needs to leave. Vayikri Yonatan acharei hanar, and then Yonatan called out again to the nar, saying, Mehera, quickly, chusha al Talmud, hurry up, chusha al Talmud, chusha, Mitzvah Sion says, is another language of being quick. So it's almost like saying, Mehera, Mehera, like quick, schnell, schnell. Al ta'amod, don't stand. So this is unscripted. This is not part of the plan. Because the reaction of Shaul was unscripted. Meaning the plan was, let's see how Shaul reacts. Yonatan in his wildest dreams couldn't have imagined that that Shaul would have gotten so angry that he perhaps threatened his own son's life.
Right.
So he's giving extra call to David, saying, you got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get out of here. Vayilaket nar Yehonatan esachitzim, vayavo adonav. So the nar of Yonatan gathered up the arrows, he got them, and he brought them to his master. Pasuk lametes, vanar lo yadam uma. The attendant knew nothing of the real plan. Ach Yonatan veDavid yadu asadaver. Only Yonatan and David knew what was going on. Vayitein Yonatan eskeilav el anar asher lo. Yonatan took his wares, he took his bow, and I guess the rest of the arrows, whatever he had with him, gave it to the nar, who was with him. Vayomerlo, and he said, Lechavi ha'ir. Right? It's like a caddy. Take the clubs back to the clubhouse. Take the bow and arrow. Hevia ha'ir, go back to the city, meaning go back to the palace. Your services are no longer needed. Hanar ba. The nar went. The David come me'etzel ha'negev, and David got up from being on the southern side of a stone. The Mefarshim say, "Vayipal la'apav arza," he fell down to the ground. "Vayishtachu shalosh pa'amim," and he bowed three times. Who, you know, what the bowing is? I'm not 100% certain. "Vayishku ish esrei'ehu." And they kissed each other. Vayivku ish esrei'ehu. They cried. Ad David higdil, until David cried even more. Mm-hmm. So your initial reaction is, what's going on? What happened to the whole plan? The plan was they never have to meet. They never have to see each other. face to face. So I think you can explain, and again, nothing is clear from the pasuk, but if no one else was going to see them, then they could say goodbye, in the way you should, by person to person. Yonatan was nervous if there were going to be people around, then he needs to go to that's why he came up with the plan of shooting the arrows. Or you might say that it was just the emotions of Yonatan that got the better of him, or the emotions of David that got the better of him, that the situation being so progressively worse in their minds than Yonatan, at least by Yonatan, than what he thought, so he realized that this may very well be the final goodbye, and maybe you even risk something to say a final goodbye the right way. Because you're not thinking rationally, you think your emotions are getting the better of you, and they're both crying. David Higdil, David cried more. Why David's crying more? When they turn around, Yonatan gets to go live in the palace, and David is going to Nowheresville. David is going to the ultimate unknown. By Yomer, last pasuk in the parak. Vayomer Yonatan leDavid, Yonatan says to David, Lech leShalom, go to peace. Asher nishbanu shenenu, that both of us have sworn, anachnu, we, b'shem Hashem, in the name of God, Lemor saying, Hashem yeh beini uveinecha, God would be between me and you, God is our witness, uvein zari uvein zaracha, between my children and your children, ad olam forever. They're saying that we've taken an oath to one another, we've taken a pact that you'll be peaceful to me, I'll be peaceful to you, your children and my children will be peaceful to each other. Now, I didn't see anyone talk about the fact that it says Lech LeShalom. We're going to see, if you stick with me, towards the end of Shmuel Beis, that when David parts with Avshalom, his son, he says Lech B'Shalom. The Gemara picks up on that. The Gemara says you should never say Lech B'Shalom. You should always say Lech L'Shalom. Lech, and the Gemara says that when Yisro was talking to Moshe, he said Lech L'Shalom, and that was for very good. And when David said Lech B'Shalom to Avshalom, go in peace as opposed to for peace, so Avshalom ends up, meeting his death. So you say Lech L'Shalom to someone who's going to live, and you can say Lech B'Shalom if someone's not going to live. One of the explanations that I saw is Lech L'Shalom is almost saying, Lech B'Shalom is saying go in peace, is that the person is going to go thinking they're in peace, the journey they're going to be on is peaceful, when it's really not. And if you think you're on a peaceful journey and you're really not, that's dangerous, and you might meet your end. If you know the journey that you're going on is not peaceful, but you're giving this person a bracha, go to peace. Go on this horrible, bumpy journey. But my bracha to you is that you find peace, so that's positive. So Lech L'Shalom, again, I didn't see anyone say it here, but the contrast is that David says it in a it ends up being negative to his own son, and here you have Yonatan kind of, I don't know if he knows. I imagine he knows the Torah, so he's paraphrasing Yisro to Moshe, saying Lech L'Shalom, to go in peace. In terms of Yonatan, so Yonatan decided to allow David to go, but Yonatan decided to stay in the palace, and that decision, that decision kind of sealed his fate. That his fate gets tied up now with his father, and anything that's going to happen to Shaul is going to happen to Yonatan, as opposed to, and again, the alternative could he have actually chosen the alternative to run away with David, but in the end, he will be held accountable for his decision of staying back with his father, and that's something that we'll see. But as far as I remember, and I need a review, I think this is the last time that they meet. And it's a very emotional. It's a very emotional goodbye. And at this point, we get David. David has nowhere to go, and David's going to be for the next few months of storyline of the timeline of the story. David is searching for places for safety, places for food, places for protection, and Bez Hashem will pick up next time. Why can't he just-